but I haven't really had a chance to sit down and talk.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFO on the Cover. I hope everyone's having a great evening, a great morning, a great afternoon, wherever you are on our beautiful blue planet. Tonight's guest is going to be Melinda Leslie, and we're going to talk about her in just a minute. For my friends who are keeping up with Dee Andrew, who's ICAR's national director, she had surgery today. For all our Facebook friends and all the fans that know her from Eye of the Sky and other places that she hangs out, she's been fighting cancer over the last few months. She looked like she got the breast cancer looked, and they found some cancer in her liver. But she had surgery today, and when I talked to David, he said it was minuscule. They could hardly even find it. They take a bite out of the liver, and she's going to be in recovery for the next week or so. So everyone send her love and prayers and thoughts and whatever else you can send to it. So I just wanted to let everybody know that, because I know some of y'all would have caught the post on Facebook, but not everybody's a Facebooker. And everybody thinks everybody's a Facebooker, but not everyone is a Facebooker. So, for people who know her and love her and want to know what's going on, I wanted to bring up to speed. Anytime, Dave, if you know what's going on, I will let y'all know. I promised Dee I wouldn't bug her for a couple of days to give her some time to recover, but I will pester her this weekend and see how she's feeling and how she's doing. So if any other thing comes up or anything else comes up, I will call y'all and let y'all know, or I will get on the internet and let y'all know what's going on. Tonight's guest is Melinda Leslie. Most of the regular listeners to UFO on the Cover should know Melinda by now. If you don't, shame on you. She's got one of the top 5 rated archives on the network, so y'all should check it out. It's a special her and I did on Millabs a while back. You should go check it out. It's a really good interview. Tonight's going to be a little different. Her and a friend of hers have got into a venture in Sedona, Arizona, which I personally find interesting because I like sky watching and I like being out in the night skies. And actually, where they're at is a very beautiful part of the country. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and then I'm going to get her to talk a little bit about her own personal experiences in the second hour. So, Melinda, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
And how have you been?
How are you tonight?
I'm good, but you're the one that sounded like you were having a hard time tonight.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I went out of town on a really last-minute family emergency. Really big deal. But just drove back in and got held up. I should tell listeners, like what I was saying to you right before going on the air, I live in Arizona now. I'm in Sedona, and I'm driving back from Phoenix. Well, I flew from Phoenix to Southern California to be with some family, and I flew back and landed at Sky Harbor in Phoenix, and then my car was actually, I have a family member in Phoenix, my car was at their house, so I had to drive home, and my air conditioning's broken in my car. Well, it's about 115 in Phoenix. And so I'm driving home in a 115-degree temperature with a broken air conditioning. And we've had monsoon season here in Sedona. Well, they've been getting rains. Well, they had an electrical storm. It wasn't raining in the area yet, but the lightning's coming down. Well, it started a brush fire. And they had a brush fire going on both sides of the freeway. And as I'm driving through there, with smoke and flames on either side of the freeway, I'm laughing about, and here I am with conditioning, it's 115 out, and I'm thinking, when they talk about driving through a furnace in Arizona, they're not kidding, because I was literally driving through a furnace. Oh, my God. But I got here, and it held me up. They stopped up the road for a while, and it held me up, and I thought I'd be late, and I just so happened I got home 5 minutes before the show.
That's what y'all call literally high water in hell to get to the river.
That's right.
You know what that reminds me of? Is when Stanton was going to Roswell that year and flipped his car and walked the rest of the way.
Oh my God.
I know, that's what I said. I was like, Stan, you tough old bird. So now tell me a little bit about what y'all are doing down in Sedona, because, I've heard about this. I heard you talk about it just a couple weeks ago with somebody, and then I heard Kim talking about it.
Yeah.
But I really, all I know is you're doing sky watches, and I just want to know what this is all about.
Okay, well, where do I start? Kim Carlsberg, a rather famous abductee, and also one of my MILAB cases. And for those
out there
who don't know, when we're saying MILAB, what that means, or MILAB, it means military, M-I-L-N-A-B for abduction, and it means alien abductees who get targeted by covert ops and military groups because they've had alien experiences, and then will get re-picked up by them and interrogated and have all sorts of follow-up stuff, and it's really quite involved, and it's my primary research in ufology that I've been doing for, well, I went public as an abductee 22 years ago, and have been doing the covert ops my lab research for about 20 years, or 19 maybe to be more specific, but roughly 20 years. And Kim was one of my cases, and she was a well-known abductee. She's written 3 books, most notably Beyond My Wildest Dreams, which was her first one, which she wrote with artist Daryl Anka. And then her newest one, which is actually The Art of Close Encounters, which is a phenomenal coffee table art book all about the artwork done of 150 different experiences, and not hers, but maybe a few in there hers, but of other experiencers. So it's everything from abductees to also contactees to people with sightings, people with angelic encounters, you know, kind of the full game that falls under a UFO or ET contact. And the artwork is either done by the artist or by someone else, a professional artist on, what am I saying? The artwork is done by the experiencer, by the person who had the experience, or by an artist on their behalf. Most of the artwork, though, is done directly by the person who had the experience, and it's, like I said, coffee table, fine quality. Well, anyway, so that's kind of her background. Her and I joined up, long story short, to do this skywatching business. And what we do is we take people out with military night vision goggles. For those of you who are familiar with that, they're called PVS-7 Generation 3 military night vision goggles. And we take people out here in Sedona and go skywatching at night with the night goggles, which allow for up to 20,000 times more light than you see with your naked eye. I've told they have a range of increasing light to as much to at least 10,000 times, and maybe as much as 20,000 times, depending on the conditions. And here in Sedona, we have really great conditions because it's a dark sky city. It's built and designed to keep a dark, open sky at night and to have very little, if almost no, light pollution. And you get away from the main streets, and you have zero light pollution. And so we take people out with the goggles, like I said, that allow for up to 20,000 times more light, and we do night vision, and we have sightings of true unknowns, a.k.a. UFOs, every time. And how I got turned on to that was, I think it's about 5 years ago now, a gentleman in Northern California by the name of Ed Grimsley, many people are probably familiar with Ed, discovered in Northern California that he could go out and see UFOs with military night vision goggles. And he got a couple more pairs, and he started taking people out, and now he goes to conferences and events, and I know there's a few spin-off groups who are doing what he did in taking people out. And I went out with him first at a conference in the Bay Area in Southern California in San Jose, and saw some stuff at this conference at San Jose, and then maybe a year later did it again, and then did it again, and then he did it out at the International Congress when it was still in Laughlin, Nevada, went out there, and then also there was a time when he had a group of people here in Sedona. I came here with a friend. I wasn't living here then. I just visited with a friend for a different reason, and we happened to be out here at the same time he was taking a group out, so we went out and had just, you know, phenomenal sightings, many of them that night. And so, you know, between all those, over the years, I was bitten by it. I thought, this is really outstanding. Oh, my God, someone should be doing this all the time here in Sedona. And there was actually a small store that has now gone out of business called Yield UFO Store that was here in Sedona. A couple of partners had opened up this cute little UFO gift shop, and they were taking people out the night vision. They had been trained and I believe, you know, bought their first goggles from Ed and that kind of thing. And and even though they were doing it, I knew, you know, Sedona, there's, for instance, there's like at least 12 or 14, you know, major Jeep tour companies here. There's a lot of Vortex and sightseeing companies. There's, you know, there's tourism and, you know, companies that can take you out hiking and companies that take you out on planes and motors and, you know, there's even one that takes people out with Segways on a Segway tour. You know, so there's all these tours out here, and I thought, well, shoot, there could be more than one group of people doing it. It just so happened, so we came out, and I came out first last October, and then again in November to make arrangements, and I'm doing it through a store out here, a store and center called the Center for the New Age. They have psychics and healers and body workers there, and it's a large metaphysical bookstore and gift shop, and they have classy things. I had been familiar with them for a long time, so I kind of brokered a deal with them. And then at the International Congress this spring, I was telling Kim Kelsberg, who was there selling her book, telling her all about it. And she said, oh, my God, I'd really like to do that. And that started talks between her and I. And then we ended up moving here in about April. And here we are, beginning of August, and voila, you know. So we moved here in April. Kim and I are actually renting a house together and running this business. We also do vortex tours during the day. Sedona is very famous for these magnetic vortex areas that increase consciousness and enlightenment and healing and meditative states, because of the natural magnetic energy that flows up from the earth and in these beautiful rock formations. If anyone out there listening has ever been to Sedona, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so we go out to those areas and we take people in vortex tours, but our specialty is taking people out at night with the PVS-7 Gen 3 military night vision goggles and having UFO sightings. And, you know, I knew we'd have a lot of sightings because when I had done it here in Sedona before, we had some things gone out with the night then prior to moving here and everything I had. But I never dreamt that we'd really have sightings like every time. I mean, I really didn't think we'd have them every time. I figured occasionally there'd be some evenings where we wouldn't have any. But I figured people were, you know, paying for the opportunity and to have the chance. Well, now, as it turns out, and I am not kidding you, Joe, I am absolutely flat out serious. I mean, anyone out there I am serious about this field. I do all my research very evidence-based, or at least I try to, you know, as much as you can. But I'm very serious. It's all about the evidence to me. And I tell you, no joke, we have had sightings every time we've gone out with the goggles. Every single time. And in fact, we always ask people at the end of the evening, even though we're aware we've had sightings and we've been with them, we always say, okay, you know, we get back in the car afterwards, and we always say, pretend it's not us. Pretend we're your, you know, really skeptical family members and your skeptical coworkers, you know, and what are you going to tell them? You know, give us your most conservative number. Of course we probably misidentified some satellites, even though we're very good about pointing those out and the differences between what we're seeing in satellites and every kind of plane, you know, commercial and military and private planes and helicopters. And we point out all that stuff. We point out shooting stars. We point out all the constellations, which we're having to learn. We're needing to brush up on our astronomy. And we know, but we're needing to learn more. And, you know, and the stars and everything. And so, you know, so it really stands out when we see something that's a true unknown, that, you know, it's doing unusual things, like stopping, changing direction, going 10 times faster than the satellites go. Suddenly flaring up and then blinking out right when you're looking at it, and you know, and then we see formations. We see 2, 3, 5, even as many as 8 in formation. And so when we see those things, you know, so we clearly are certain that it's none of the above. It remains a true unknown. I mean, can we really say what it is? No, I don't know who's piloting it. Is it? They appear to be under intelligent control. They are physical objects, you know, that we're watching. And so, you know, as we see these, And so at the end of the night, I always say, you know, give me your most skeptical number, being that we probably misidentified some satellites and those ones that were remain uncertain and this and that. Give me your, you know, lowest number. How many true unknowns are you certain you saw? And to this day, no joke, the lowest number we've got from any group going out is 5. So, you know, to this date, that pretty holds true. The other night, we had maybe a guy say, well, I saw 3, and another girl saw 3, but when they talked together, they didn't necessarily see the same 3, so they ended up saying, okay, well, and then they came back with a number like 6 when they actually start talking about it. So even then, we're like, oh, my God, this is going to be the first time somebody said below 5. But they ended up coming back with, when they really talked about it and thought about it, that they were certain that they had seen 6. So thank God it wasn't our lowest night. But we never dreamt in a million years that we'd see stuff every time. And yet we do. It is so phenomenal, and it is, we have so much fun. We love turning people on to it. You know, when it's a cliche, of course, in ufology, but it's so true in this field that seeing is believing.
It's true.
You know, to create a situation environment that allows people to have their own personal sightings, and then to watch the paradigm change that people go through. You know, people, when they wrap their head around it, and then they go, oh, my God, you mean these are up there all the time? And you know, when we tell them the stories of other stuff we've seen, they realize that we're seeing this all the time, and that they realize, you know, it wasn't any special thing that they saw them that night. It's just that common, and that there's that many things up there. And, you know, I'd recommend to everyone out there, if you hear of a group going out wherever you live, if anyone's going out with night vision, and make sure they have Gem 3, because if those are the only ones that are going to have the clarity to really see the stars. And if anyone's going out with the Gem 3, you know, go out. You know, or if you hear of Ed, or if you can make it here to Sedona. Of course, I'd love to take people out if they can, you know, if they can come to Sedona, and or if anyone listening to this is in northern Arizona, come on over. You know, we're only 2 hours from Phoenix. We're only 2 hours from the Grand Canyon, and only half an hour from Flagstaff, and, you know, and right near a lot of, you know, we're only a couple hours from Tucson, and, you know. So I tell people, come here, you know, go out with us. You will have sightings. Of course, I always tell people we can't guarantee it because I have no control over them, and I'm pointing my finger up, you know, pointing up at the sky. I have no control over what they're doing. So, of course, I can never guarantee a sighting, but when people say, what if we don't see something? And I always say, if we don't see anything tonight, you guys will be the first group. Because so far, we've never had a number less than 5. And the highest number we've had was 2 women one night who were certain they saw about 24. I even thought that was too high. I would have put it at about 15 or 16 that night. But they were certain, I mean, as far as like real, but they were certain they saw 24.
The first time I ever got Ed to show me the ones he had, we were in D.C., and I think we seen 9.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised because, you know, I was very skeptical about this. I'm going to be honest with everybody listening tonight. So Ed tells me all this stuff. I'm like, dude, there ain't no damn way you see in UFOs night. So I had gone to do a coast-to-coast interview, and when I got back, he's like, he's sitting outside, and he says, let's go see.
Yeah.
This was like 3 o'clock in the morning. So we walk out on the side of the hotel of the Hilton, which is mixed light at best, and sure enough, wasn't 5 minutes looking in the sky, and I'm like, so then I'm thinking satellite? No. Then I'm looking, I was really impressed with them. I got to say, the Gen 3 has impressed me. They really did.
Oh, yeah.
And I know they're expensive as all hell.
Oh, yeah. Well, people, you can buy them, but if you go online to get them, and if you're getting new Gen 3s, anything old, you're going to have problems. They're not going to see as good. They may have black spots in them. You know, so if you're going to spend the money, you might as well get new ones, because even used ones are going to cost you like $3,000. And if you're spending less than $3,000, you are not getting Gen 3s. I don't care what someone tells you, they ain't Gen 3s. You're getting Gen 2s or Gen 1s, which, pardon my language, you're not going to see crap. Because I know people who've thought in them and they get really frustrated. But the Gen 3s, new ones online, are going to cost $3,500 to $3,700 a piece.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's about average, too.
And the ones we have, we're about that much. And, you know, we don't have a lot of pears, but when business picks up, we'll buy more. So, you know.
Well, you don't really need a lot. I mean, in the beginning, there's got to be enough, but you can pass them around. We were passing them around.
Yeah, well, we do. We share them, and then we limit ourselves to how many people we take out at once. That's our thing. If people are going to go out, we always recommend they sign up in advance. So that way, if we get a bunch of people going to, you know, because at a certain point, we're going to cut off how many people we take because we don't want everybody having to share them. Now, occasionally, we've had like a big tour group or something like that come through, or somebody with a party or an event. And then we drop our price, because if it's going to be really a large group, like, you know, like a tour group of 10, 20, you know, 20 people, you know, whatever, looking at them, we're going to drop the price a whole bunch so that that group, you know, knows that they're going to be sharing the goggles and they're getting it at a discount, but they're not going to have as much goggle time as a small group. A small group of people, we usually limit to about 6 people or less. If they're paying, you know, full price. Otherwise, we start dropping the price. But then, you know, people, one night we had like 8 people out, and it was really kind of tough for all of them to share, you know, because everybody wanted to look. And that's why we realized when we have a few more people, we drop the price. And if we're consistently getting that many people, well, then we buy another pair.
What's the web address? www.Sedona...
SedonaUFOSkyTours.com.
Yeah. So I kept getting a bunch of emails. Ladies and gentlemen, it is on the archives.
If you look up skytours.com, I'm pretty sure that'll take you there, too. We also have a Facebook page, which is UFO Sky Tours. So UFO Sky Tours on Facebook or SedonaUFOSkyTours.com for our website.
Yeah. I've been seeing a lot of emails. But like I said, ladies and gentlemen, it's on my Facebook pages right now. It's probably on my MySpace.
And we have information on our website, as an example. We have information. We have a couple examples. Now, I admit, we have not had the ability to film what we're seeing so far. We've tried to hook up a camera. It wasn't working properly. We're going to work on it. Kim is a professional photographer, so we're going to develop that ability. But so far, when we've attempted it, it hasn't really worked. But on our website, I think we've got about 5 different videos now that are things on the Internet that are good examples of the exact same kind of stuff we're seeing. For instance, there's some stuff on there that was filmed by Ed and people, and then there was some stuff on there that was filmed by James Gilland. Whoops.
Well, I never heard a cop in Sedona before.
up our street, there was may have even been a, I didn't quite see it. I turned really quick, and it may have been an ambulance going up our street. So sorry about that. Anyway, so, you know, we have, like I said, a couple of videos on there that are examples of exactly the stuff we see. So, We thought those were all great examples, and we felt confident to tell people we didn't film these, but the samples we have up there are identical to the kind of stuff we have happen. And then we have a section on our site that's all about how we tell like a known from an unknown. So it gets all into the known things that we see, everything including owls and bats, satellites and shooting stars, and you know all the known stuff.
Yeah.
And then a description of the things that why we would classify something as none of the above. And so we have a breakdown on our site on that, on I think it's called What is a UFO Sighting or something like that. And then we have a section that is all about the tours and pricing and how you sign up and all the information about it specifically. And it's kind of all together in one section that's on a tab. I don't have my computer up right now, so I'd have to look. I think the tab, I'm pretty sure it says tour information. So tour information is all the information about the tours. And then there's Kim's and my bios for those that want to do a little reading because they're kind of long. But it's all about who we are, and so you can check that out. And then there's links. Oh, there's a link section to all of Kim's stuff. For instance, her site about her new book, the coffee table quality art book about experiences, which everyone should go take a look at. I mean, it's so amazing. And you can order it directly there through her sites. I think it's called the artofcloseencounters.com, but there's definitely a link on our site to it. And then there's also a link to my other research, which is alienexperiences.com/Melinda Leslie, and that's a link directly to my covert ops research information and that separate website. So again, from our site, SedonaUFOSkyTours.com, you can get to all that stuff. It's
okay,
all there.
How late in the year can they come down and do this? Is this all year, or y'all got to win it?
All year. This will be all year, as weather permits. Right now, for instance, we have monsoon season, but, you know, it'll rain one day and the next day it'll be clear, or it'll even rain earlier in the day and clear at night. So any time that it's clear and the weather permits and we've got people who want to go, we go. So we're available all the time. I mean, we're doing this as a full-time business, as our primary business. So this is what we're doing. And so, if people come or they're in the area, of course, if they want to make certain, like, for instance, I admit I was just out of town on a personal family emergency where I was out of town for, oh, gosh, a total of about 5 days, So there are times, but pretty much we're here and we're doing this all the time. So if people are local, they can go on our website, they can reach us, and our phone numbers are on the site. Or they can check out the Center for the New Age, and the links to their site are on our site. And the Center for the New Age can also be called directly. It's here in Sedona, and you can call them directly. Again, the phone numbers are on our site. And you can book directly through the Center for the New Age, and when they've got something, they always call us and say, hey, we've got people asking about 3 nights from now. Are you guys definitely going to be here to do it? And they always check with us. And, of course, we always say yes, because we're always available.
Well, that's where it's got to be. If you're going to run your own business, it's got to be like that.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Well,
and we want to be available whenever there's people who want to go. We're trying to make ourselves available, so we're here when people want to do it. And like I said, it's our primary business right now. And it is so much fun, Joe. Every night people have a great time. Like you started to say, you said you're so impressed by the Gen 3 goggles. And what we get when we take people out there, instantly blown away just by how many stars they see. People are unaware. I mean, even out here where we have a dark sky city, and in Sedona people always comment, oh, wow, we can see the Milky Way with their naked eye, Then they put on the goggles, and people's jaws hit the floor.
That's great.
People just go, oh, my God, I had no idea. I mean, when they allow for 20,000 times more light, you're seeing 20,000 times more stars than you ever see with your naked eye. And so even in here where it's a dark sky city and we have incredible nighttime skies, with the goggles, it's just... what can I say? It's through the roof. It's phenomenal. And that's the first thing everybody always comments on. And like a week ago, we had the Perseids meteor shower. And in the days leading up to it, people were just seeing we all were, every time we go out, we see shooting stars. I mean, in any given night, people are going to see 20 or 30 shooting stars, easy. But, those nights leading up to the Perseids, people were seeing 100 shooting stars, and they were just like, oh, my God. I mean, just that alone. I mean, people said, I don't care if we have a sighting. Just seeing the sky like this is worth it, And then, of course, then they always have sightings. So on top of it, we always have sightings.
I know I like them because I own a pair of Gen 1 and a pair of Gen 2, and as soon as I can afford the 4Gs,
yeah,
the 3s, I'll get them. Now, a friend of mine wants me to come down there in like late October, early November, because they wanted to do some live broadcast out of Sedona. I was thinking if I come down, I should get you and Kim to take me out, and we'll do a live broadcast.
Oh, that'd be a blast.
Press, too. Maybe because we can broadcast from anywhere these days. As long as there's a cell phone signal, we can broadcast now. It's really the coolest thing I've ever seen.
And then I also said, of course, we do the vortex tours during the day, going out to the magnetic vortexes that kind of made this the new age mecca that Sedona is because of that. But it's also a UFO hotspot for daytime sightings. Now, I admit, since being here, I have not had a daytime sighting yet, but I know a lot of people who live here who have. They're constantly telling me about their sightings. A well-known researcher you've probably had on your show, Tom Dongo. Have you had Tom Dongo? He's a local researcher here. He's written at least seven, maybe eight or more books about Sedona and about the activity here. And he's thoroughly investigated the Bradshaw Ranch, which is this ranch out here that was owned by a cattle ranching family for a long time and eventually was sold to the government, bought it out from them to do research and testing of whatever. And it was well known for a lot of paranormal activity and UFO sightings. And then there's areas out here, I would prefer to have underground bases, but it's beyond room now in that many people have gone down these canyons in this area. Some canyons where, you know, you, for instance, you might take a trail bike and go, you know, 10 or 20 miles out kind of thing. And people going way out into these long, deep canyons have been confronted by guards, by armed guards and guys in military uniform and black jumpsuits with, you know, AK-47s or whatever, saying, you're entering a restricted area, you have to turn around. And so there's been a lot of research out here into underground base activity, and it's been well known for many years of that activity, as well as all the paranormal and government activity out at the Bradshaw Ranch. So another thing we do is we'll take people out to some of these places during the day. Now, I admit we're not going way deep into the canyons where we're going to be confronted by armed guard and do anything so stupid as to endanger people. But we will go to, you can go to the Bradshaw area. It's very safe to go there during the day and other areas that are known as UFO hotspots. Some of those, for instance, that Tom Dongo's written about in his books. And we'll go to those places during the day and take daytime tours of the UFO hotspots. But again, the time when we have the sightings is going out at night with the goggles.
Well, I'm thinking Linda's not allowed nowhere around there. She loves to go get on places she ain't supposed to. She does. She's got to watch around military facilities. She's dangerous. No, because I'm dying to come down. You know, I've only been down to Sedona once. And I got several friends there. Well, now that you're in Canada, that makes like 12.
Yeah.
I'm well connected.
Well, Joe, you know, come stay with Kim and me. You know, I mean, and that's just it, everybody.
I'm not saying you want
to come stay with us, but certainly you or you and Linda, absolutely. But there are, you know, this is a resort community. There's so many places to stay. And there's everything from places that are really affordable to things that are really high-end and everything in between. So whatever anybody's kind of, you know, travel trip they want to put together, if they want to include it with tennis and golf or horseback riding or jeep tours or you know, helicopter and balloon tours or, you know, I mean, what, you know, wine tasting tours and whatever kind of thing somebody wants to combine, they're able to do that here. We're going to eventually have more links on our site to hotels, motels we recommend, and other, you know, services and activities here in Sedona that we recommend. I do know if you go to the Center for the New Ages site, they have some recommendations there, and so I would recommend that. But you know, if people call us and they want to ask us, you know, where do we recommend they stay and what do they do, we're certainly happy to help people, you know, put a trip together, you know, kind of a thing. But, you know, and there's a million websites out there for Sedona Tourism and the Chamber of Commerce and everything, and those are really good resources because it's a tourism community. It's designed to really cater to whatever people want to do, and again, it doesn't need to be a lot of money. It can be very affordable for people to come here.
Well, very affordable. I'm dying to see it on the locals, from a local's view. I really am. Because I liked it. You know, I was on the tourist track, which is fun. I don't mind doing a tourist thing, but anytime I know locals, I prefer to do the local thing because they always know all the good shops, all the good places to eat. And we found a hotel that we like, a little under some little mountain. Pretty, got a little brook going by, little fireplaces outside. They're not real expensive, $100 a night, I think. Maybe 90, but it was nice. It was comfortable. pretty. And it's a gorgeous town. I love coming down there. That's why I've been dying to get down here, but I don't want to get there if it's snowing. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, the only time of year that they get any snow here is January and February. And even then, the locals call, a friend of mine who's lived here for 7 years says in 7 years, she's only seen them pull out the city plows once. And she said, and all they were doing was scraping muddy streets. You know, she said it was just, they were just cleaning up the muddy streets with the plow, but she said, there was no snow on the roads. And she said that was the only time she's even seen them do that in 7 years. But, so what happens is the local beautiful rock formations get dusted. So they have a light dusting of snow, and it looks like frosting. It's amazing. And yet the streets are clear, and it doesn't, you know, hinder you getting around. It's like I said, they just call it ornamental snow. And, you know, and granted, it's cold then, but if people bundle up, we'll still, you know, if people want to go out, we'll still take them. We'll just encourage everyone to, you know, to really bundle up. And there's even the possibility of, you know, being able to go and do quite a bit of viewing directly from the car itself, too. So a friend of ours has a convertible, and we'll crank up the heat in the convertible and skywatch, you know. But so, you know, we can still do it in the winter, but really, you know, the only months where it may be hindered at all are January and February. The rest of the year, it's beautiful, and, you know, right now it's hot, but not too hot. It's in the 90s, but at night it cools down in the 80s, and that's the other thing. When it's starting to get in the high 90s during the day, at night to be able to go out, it's beautiful. I mean, anyone who's been in this area this time of year at night, it's just really gorgeous out. So, you know, we even go out in shorts and t-shirts and view at night, and it's just so lovely, you know. And then, like, when we first started doing it here in April and May, we would just encourage people to have, you know, maybe wear pants and bring a sweatshirt, because once it cools off, it might be in the 80s during the day, but it can cool off and, you know, maybe be in the low 50s at night, and yet, you know, people would just bundle up and maybe bring a hat and scarf, and then they were fine, you know. So, and that was in, that was in April and May, yeah. That was in April. So I've viewed here in March. I've been out here in March, and it's lovely in March. And then they have a big kind of push tourist season going into the beginning of December, from September, October, November, and even into the beginning of December. And then a lot of people also like to come for Christmas shopping around the holidays. So, you know, so it's a bustling place pretty much year-round.
When I was there, everybody was really nice. Well out of their way to be nice. I really liked that. I appreciated that. Anytime I'm in a tourist town, and the people are nice, it's a plus. Because some tourist towns you go to, people are just rude.
Well, it's such a new age community. I mean, your whole listening audience will be real at home, because it's very much a metaphysical community.
Although if
that's not your thing, that's okay, too, because there are, you know, churches and religious groups, and there's golfing and horseback riding and tennis and then all the beautiful hiking and outdoor adventure enthusiast stuff like hiking and dirt biking and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there's all this other stuff that you don't have to be into the New Age thing. And it's also a huge art community. It's very famous for its artwork, and the art galleries are phenomenal. So someone doesn't have to be into the metaphysics, but if you are and you're open-minded to that, then there's all these amazing activities, and there's drumming circles and channeling groups and healing groups and meditation things and a bunch of metaphysical bookstores and crystal stores and rock stores, and, you know, so it's just, if you are into that stuff, there's an endless amount of activities to do along that line. And of course, you know, the like I said, the Jeep tours, the Vortex tours, and then, you know, skywatching, which right now, to my knowledge, we're the only people doing the nighttime skywatching. Well, I shouldn't say that altogether. There are some other people with the Center for the New Age that will take you out at night, but we are, to my knowledge, and I believe this to be true, and someone can email me and tell me if I'm wrong, or better yet, call me, because I absolutely would want to know if I'm wrong, but as of right now, because the old UFO store went out of business, as of right now, we're the only people taking people out with night vision goggles.
Yeah, I think you're right, too, because when I talked to Kim, which was just coming out with the book, and he was talking about this, I had done an internet search then, and I didn't see any. And the other day, I was searching anybody doing this professionally. So I think y'all are the only group. Now, it might be some outside the U.S. Ed don't do it as a full living, though. He just does it at conferences.
Well,
yeah,
there are other people doing this in other places. I just meant here in Sedona. For instance, a group's got down in San Diego, in Southern California, and they're very actively having meetings and taking people out down in San Diego, and I give them, you know, credit for doing that, and my hat's off to them. But as far as here in Sedona, we're the only people. And actually, in Arizona, as far as I know, too.
I tell you what, if I had the 10 G's, I would do it here in New Orleans. There's lots of beautiful skies out here in the swamps, man. Plus, you get the swamp tour.
Yeah, yeah.
He likes that out here.
I'm sure there. If you have some places with really dark skies where you can really get out away from lights and see stars incredibly, you know, then you're going to have...
The stars are quite a bit higher.
Now, I do think maybe we have a little bit of a benefit in Sedona because it is a UFO hotspot area. It's been long known for a lot of UFO activity. There's a lot of videos and photos of UFOs that have been done here, and it's really common knowledge amongst locals here to have a UFO sighting. I mean, you bring up UFOs in any of the stores or supermarkets or banks, you know, with any of the local folk, and they all go, oh, yeah, I saw one the other day, blah, blah, blah. You know, like it's like no big deal amongst people here. And if they haven't seen one themselves, they're you know, the kid has or their cousins have or their next-door neighbor has or, you know, everyone here has a story. Either they've seen one themselves or they know someone that's seen one. And they're all so quick to, like, tell us, you know. So we're hearing of people's personal accounts all the time. So I think because it is a hotbed for UFO activity that glee to see something here than anywhere else. You know, I'd like to take the night vision as Mexico City. For as many sightings as they have down in Mexico, oh, my God, can you imagine what would happen there with the night vision? Hi.
I'm not thinking of Hans' video. He's got some wild stuff down there.
Yeah.
He's got some stuff flying outside.
Yeah.
I've noticed lately that there's a few good spots around the country you can go sit and see. You can go sit and see stuff without anything, but it's still, it's so much nicer with it. And you never know if you might get that lucky shot up close. You know, when you happen to have them all, you know, one of them up close and personal visits, while you get the goggles on.
Yeah. I think, for instance, that Roswell Museum should invest in a bunch of pairs and be taking people out. Now, Roswell's not necessarily a hotbed for UFO sightings. It's not. It's not well known for continued UFO sightings. But just because of that being, you know, such a huge point of tourism for the town and people going to the museums and people going to Roswell because it is Roswell, because the Roswell is, man, those, I would think that someone in that town should invest in some pairs because, you know, they could get people going out on UFO tours every night. And how great would it be to not only go to the history and the lore and the, you know, and the history of it all and also the military history, but to also have a sighting while you're there, I think that would be a really cool thing. You know, so I would encourage somebody out there to do it in Roswell. Someone has once said to me, gee, you know, have you thought of doing this other places? And I said, well, yeah, but it would mean touring away from here, and if I tour from here, I'm not here to do it here. I'm not here to take people. And then, it, you know, as far as starting groups up in other areas or something, that just sounds like way too much
franchise.
We're doing it full time here, so you know, but my God, if somebody out in Rachel, Nevada, you know, or in Rachel, Nevada, or Roswell, New Mexico, you know, or for that matter, Mexico City, wanted to start up a business doing this, I think they should.
I agree. But you know, that's a good place. We got to take a break. So that's a good place to go. Quick though, give them the sites before we go break.
Yeah, yeah. As I said, it's Sedona, UFOSkyTours.com, and also the Center for the New Age. But their website and Kim's and my other sites and stuff can all be reached through SedonaUFOSkyTours.com.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back in about 8 minutes. I'm going to probably talk a little bit more about Sedona, too, because I've got some other stuff I want to ask Melinda. And then I'm going to get Melinda to tell her own contacts. Oh, I got some questions for her about contacts in Sedona. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in about 8 minutes, so please stay tuned.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Are you a fan of the unknown?
Do you constantly watch the skies, wondering if there's something out there?
Fear of things going bump in the
night. Mystery Radio brings you head first into the world of the paranormal with the latest news and interviews with the paranormal elite. With hosts Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, you are sure to be consumed in the world of ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, conspiracy theories, and the unknown.
So check out Whispers Radio every Tuesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Central. And give us a call, 1-866-514-1600.
Visit us at www.whispersradio.com.
Hi, I'm Gia Scott. I'm the host of this really cool little radio program on Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. It's called The Dawn of Shades. I bring in a wide variety of guests, and we talk about all sorts of things. Some of them are authors, some of them are experiencers, but it's all paranormal. Do tune in to The Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays, and you can always catch our guest list at www.gscott.com.
The Church of Mabus radio show is now in session. Saturday nights at 11 p.m. East with High Strange Scholars teaching us of ufology, the paranormal, and the occult, and the metaphysical. Seek Sanctuary with the Dark Reverends, Jeffrey Pritchard and Guy Widell at www.mabusincarnate.com. Always moshing with the apocalypse. Now get down on your knees and pray.
Hi, you've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know, I'm Irish.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
We'll be right back. about tomorrow.
Topic? Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about? And please join us here every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for Out of the Sky, the UFO Synopsis with your host, D. Andrew, right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Remember, UFO research is not a belief system.
Hey, Steph. Second Sight NYC must be doing something right.
Why do you say that, Chris?
Well, we've told people to kiss our beep if they want something sugar-coated to buy a donut, and we have more listeners than ever.
Maybe that's something to do with everything Second Sight NYC has to offer.
What do you mean, like our rapid-fire readings or our real cool New York accent?
What about the gemstone of the week, psychic dream interpretation, email readings, and birthday week readings?
Plus, we always have a great guest interview.
You still lose your mind every now and then, Chris.
Yeah, whatever. And you're still there to reel me back in, Benetti. Let's cross the threshold of what's real and unreal together.
Join us each week at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we walk through the door into the paranormal world.
The last time I walked through that door, I couldn't find my way back.
I said the paranormal door, Chris, not the abnormal door.
Real funny, real funny. We make the unbelievable believable.
Join us.
Hello, everyone. Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Come join us each Friday evening at A Global Focus's new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit, and at this moment I said, okay.
Six gun jump. Worked with
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to UFO Undercover. I'm the Fastest Says, and I am your host, Joe Montaldo. I hope everyone enjoyed the first hour of the show this evening with Melinda Leslie and I. We're going to get into a few other things as we come back here. Guys, be sure to go out and check it out. I mean, I got to say, you know, I was a little weirded out about the night goggles the first time I was talking to people about it, because everybody kept telling me about it. We're always seeing this, always seeing that, always seeing this. But I got to say, I've had two occasions where I've got to look through the gen trees, and both times I've seen something. Now, I'm not going to swear it was alien craft, because I really don't know what the hell it was I've seen, but I'm going to tell you this. I've looked in the night skies enough to know that it wasn't something I hadn't seen before. I mean, it wasn't something I had seen before. Definitely was something different. Definitely. So get over there, check it out, guys. Melinda's a nice person. Kim's a nice person. Go down and see him. take him up in their offer. And if you want to kind of get to know both of them, you can go over to ParanormalRadioNetwork.org, type in either one of their names. There's several archives with both of them available there. You can even get to know them before you get there, and even know a little bit about them before you get there.
Sure.
So you have your hand. Go check it out. Go down and visit.
We also, when we take people out, we're also always telling them about our own personal stories, because people go, have you ever had an experience? And we go, you know, Kim and I, we're like, yeah, you know. And they're like, well, what happened? And you know, and then we start telling them about our experiences, and you know, it really blows people's minds. You know, poor tourists coming through here. we take them out, and they're like, you've been abducted? You know, and then they start asking us all this stuff. And, you know, Kim and I, we start getting into our experiences and watch out, you know.
It's been scary.
You know, and that's even, we stick to, like, the tame experiences. For the people that are new to it, we stick to the really safe, you know, really evidence-based, you know, tame experiences. Occasionally I'll bring up the MyLab stuff, and I can just tell that way exceeds people's acceptability level.
Okay, excuse me. I need to walk over here now.
Yeah, really. But one thing I want to bring up that I forgot to mention, too, for people is we also have, so people are in, you know, the greater, you know, if you have any listeners and anyone hears this who's in the greater, you know, Sedona, Northern Arizona area, you know, Verde Valley area, we have or traveling through here, but we have a contact discussion group every Wednesday at 7 at the Center for the New Age. And we're getting over like 15 people every time now. And it's, you know, it's everything from people who've just had sightings to people coming who just have questions to, of course, people with abduction and contact and walk-in experiences and starseed experiences. And, you know, we open it up to everybody's experiences and for a chance for people to meet and share and discuss and ask questions. And it's just been a really great discussion group. You know, yeah, it's a support group. We're not really calling it that, a session group, but it's certainly, you know, supportive to people who've had experiences. And so that's every Wednesday at 7. And then we also have, it's really kind of fun, our office is this little old travel trailer. it's hokey, but in a really cool way. And it's like this old, oh, I don't know, it looks like a 50s or 60s, maybe even early 70s travel trailer that is parked along behind the Center for the New Age. And it was converted into offices, and that's where our office is. So we have, it's a UFO research center where we have a little lending library, and we always are showing DVDs of lectures and conferences and old TV shows and documentaries about UFOs, or I'll play a tape of a lecture, for instance, you know, anything from talks Kim and I have given at various conferences to talks by other researchers. And so we've always got a DVD or tape playing and books that people can sit down and look at and pictures and posters and photos of UFOs on the walls and information about Kim's and my individual research, as well as information about the tours. So if anyone ever comes by the research center, they're welcome. That's open to the public, and people come in and they ask us questions, and of course Kim and I regale them with stories of our experiences. It's pretty funny. So it's really, you know, to get people who are really new to this asking the tough questions or the silly questions. You know, we get all of it. It's interesting. And, you know, that's very interesting. I was telling another researcher friend of mine that what I didn't necessarily realize, because when you go to UFO conferences and even when you do radio interviews, you're preaching to the choir. You're preaching to people who are usually knowledgeable about the subject or linked to it, have followed it, have heard, you know, your listeners have heard your multiple guests and your other shows and people who've gone to conferences follow the subject. But it's a very different thing when you get a curious public. Yes, I get those people who fit into those categories, but then I get people who are quite frankly frightened by the subject. And it's very interesting when, you know, like a family or group of people will come ask about the tours, and maybe some of them want to go, but some of the friends will be like, oh, we don't want to go. And I've literally seen families and groups like split up, or some of them have come on the tours and the other ones went out to dinner or just decided to go sit in their hotel room or something because they were too scared to go. And it's really silly because when we have the sightings, you're seeing basically lights in the sky a great distance away. It's a very safe, very kind of removed from the subject experience that allows you to have a sighting yet never feel, you know, in jeopardy in any way. But just people, I've had, you know, people come into the UFO Research Center and ask questions, and it's very interesting. Like, some people are hesitant. Like, they'll come to the Research Center and they'll see the signs, and we have this little patio, a stand out on the patio, but they won't go in. It's like they have to be coaxed or encouraged to go in. And then I show them stuff, and they'll stand there with their hands folded, like they're afraid to pick up. You know, like I have, you know, on one table I have Leslie Keene's, you know, UFOs book, or, you know, her Leslie, you know, her last one, Leslie's last one about, you know, governments and government officials and pilots and military officials, you know, talk about their own experiences. And then next to it, I have AD, After Disclosure, by Dolan and Zabel. You know, so I have Rich and Bryce's book standing next to Leslie's. You know, and I have people just with their arms folded just looking at those. And I'll be like, pick one up, you know, especially Leslie's. I'll hand them Leslie Keene's book. It's like, are you new to this subject? Look at this one. You know, this is about people who are highly credible talking about what they personally know, you know, and it's just really funny to see, you know, and I get people who are literally afraid to go. I had someone so afraid to go out and have a sighting that they said, if I have a sighting, I said, well, they said, like, what will happen to me? I said, nothing, you know, and they said, well, will my belief system change? And I said, yeah. You know, it's called a paradigm shift, and you'll be in a different paradigm where the existence of this is real. And they literally said, I don't want that. I'm afraid to have to think about that. I don't want my paradigm changed. And they were serious, and we had a nice little discussion, and you know, and I honor other people's beliefs, and it was just very interesting. I didn't realize that I would get these mixed feelings about having the experiences, and yet you do. You know, you get these people that, or people come back and they're curious, but they don't really want to know. You know, and it's very interesting. But most, when people do, you know, finally sign up for a tour and, you know, pay their money to do it, then they're committed to being open-minded about it. And yes, I've had some of those people while we're driving out to the location say, I'm a little bit afraid, you know, and I put them at ease right away to say, you know, we're seeing lights in the sky at great distance, and it'll feel very removed from you. And, you know, I purposefully say that. I literally downplay the fact, you know, that I tell people we're not going to see structured craft. First off, have we seen structured? Yes, but very rarely. And I tell people, you know, you're going to have a removed experience from it. And mostly because I am having to put people at ease, you know. But that's very strange that this, to learn that this subject does scare so many people. It's a very interesting thing, and it was something that Kim and I didn't realize we were going to get this kind of this attitude from people, you know. And I mean, granted, it's not everyone. Some people are really into it and open-minded and. You know, but again, we've so much surrounded ourselves, as I'm sure you can relate to, Joe, you know, with people who are interested in the subject, knowledgeable, you know, and investigating it, to suddenly get this total, you know, outside public and have their reaction, and it's been curious to us. It's been curious to us that to learn that this subject still scares so many people. It's very interesting.
Well, no, I understand why it does. I mean, anytime we make the local paper, the local news, when people talk to us about it, it freaks them out. And it's because it's a paradigm shift. If most people are not ready to give up their everyday understanding of the universe and God and everything else, they're happy and safe in their little
world.
So, I mean, I understand it, but at least they're trying. So, at least I'll get to see them coming out of their shell, you know, or trying to come out of their shell. That's always a plus. Now, while you're out there, have you had any personal experiences? Anything weird happen out there?
No. I mean, I have.
I mean, when you were with
not involved with him, but you know, I think I've talked to you. In fact, I know I have since the experience that happened in November out here, where came out with a friend, and it was to meet with the center to make our arrangements and everything, and we stayed with another friend of mine and her family here in town. This was all, you know, of course, before I moved here. And my friend and I that traveled together, my friend we stayed with and her daughter, so four of us had a MyLab experience together from her house. But that was my last experience. And so that was the last time I had something happen.
Wow.
And that was last, did I say November actually? Was it October? Let me think about this. Or was it October? Oh, I'm just forgetting. I have to look at some notes. But it was either October or November. And that was, maybe it was October. But anyway, so that was the last time I had something happen. And nothing alien since then. So, you know, Kim and I joked about it, and people said, oh, Abduction Central, you know. But when truth is, we have not had anything happen. And, you know,
maybe on the right
lighting, and I did say, yes, most of it is night, you know, lights in the sky, you know, somewhat removed. But we have occasionally seen some spectacular things when we've been out, and we've had some pretty good spectacular sightings, again, at night, the things that have not required the goggles. For instance, there was one night, oh, my gosh, and Kim will go on and on about this. It was really quite phenomenal. We had this large glowing object that, and this is exactly what it looked like, to quote Kim, it looked like the moon through fog. So it looked like a full moon through the fog, or, you know, through a thin layer of clouds, you know, like if anyone has seen a full moon on a foggy night, it's exactly what it looked like. And so this kind of, you know, hazy white round disc comes barreling away and pulsing really slow and strange, like, you know, it's hard to describe, but I think from the sound I just made, you get the idea. The slow pulse, and then all of a sudden, it dove really fast behind this hill off in the distance, a hill with a big hill with big fancy houses on it, and it dove really fast, like, Kim and I actually thought, oh, my God, it's going to crash, because it was, like, coming straight down behind that hill. And it was so large. It was, I mean, you know, anyone who's been a MUFON investigator and gone through that training knows you put your arm out at an arm's length. You say, how big is it? And usually things that you see at arm's length can be, you know, anything from a point of light and something small to maybe dime, or nickel size. So I want to say this thing was like nickel size at arm's length. Well, if you put your arm out and you hold up a nickel, it doesn't sound very big, but when you suddenly take your arm away, you realize you're looking at something pretty close. And this thing was like a nickel at arm's length. It was like bigger than the full moon, and it was really, really phenomenal. So that was one of the signs we had one night. There was one time when I was out with a family, I mentioned earlier about the Bradshaw Ranch, an area very famous for paranormal activity, and then bought by the government and all this stuff. Much like the infamous Skinwalker Ranch that people in ufology are familiar with, Bradshaw was like another Skinwalker. And Bradshaw out here in Sedona, I'd taken some people out there near it one night, a family, and they were all up on the lore and had read about it, so they wanted to go there. And we ended up seeing this large amber orb, this large amber light come down over us. You know, classic amber, you know, orange color that many people describe UFOs to be. And and it came over us, and it zigzagged, and then it did this great big arcing turn, stopped, and then shot straight up. And even when it came over, she had that, like, silent vacuum thing of like, we had heard crickets and the wind and stuff earlier. All of a sudden, it was like no sound. It was like being in a vacuum. We all commented on there was no sound. And then this thing shot straight up. So, you know, so again, so we've had, and then, so we've had these incredible sightings without the goggles. And then with the goggles, there was one time, one night, when we saw a formation of maybe eight things flying together. And there was another night where guests were watching five things come in from, like, different areas, like different, you know, whatever, quadrants of space, whatever. Five lights came and formed a formation together. And that from all these different areas, they flew in and then sat there. Once they, like, achieved this kind of, like, arrow-shaped formation, they just sat there for the longest time before they started to wink out. But it was so weird to see them come in and pull together and then stay there for the longest time. So that was really strange. Now, that did require the goggles. Same with the formation of eight. Those required the goggles. But there have been, as I said, times when we've seen stuff where we haven't even needed the goggles. So, but that's more rare. Usually our sightings involve lights and usually do require the goggles to be able to see them.
Well, I can see that. I guess it's some places you get to sight, and at least out at Sedona, you know, you're going to probably see something down there just randomly with your eyes. It's a good place to see stuff.
Yeah.
The only time I've ever seen anything in Roswell, I was thinking about what you said about Roswell. On two occasions, driving into Roswell, coming from the east, we seen Tom's coming in, which was weird. And at the 60th anniversary, I got to asking around, and quite a few other people had noticed on a couple of occasions they had seen something weird coming in. But you never know, it just be quite orange orb in the sky. It could be any damn thing. I don't know what it was. But it was weird. It made me, when you said that, I forgot about that. I'm going to have to go write that down so I don't forget about it. I'm going to have to come down just so I can go look, because like I said, the gin trees are great. Excuse me there, buddy. Sorry, I had somebody come visit me real quick. Now, so it's been kind of quiet since you moved in. See, maybe you're on the right path here. Maybe E.T. said, oh, she actually finally listened. Damn.
What was that? I didn't quite hear you.
Well, I was thinking maybe E.T. just kind of looked down and said, you know what? I got them both doing the right thing. We'll leave them alone for a little while.
maybe. Well, yeah. I mean, who knows, you know.
I'm
going to try to second guess what they're thinking or why. But yeah, we thank God we haven't had stuff happen. So it was me not since last October. And that was an incident that involved ETs and military together. But that was the last one.
And, that's a good thing. Because I was thinking about you just the other day. We were in Pensacola, Florida. Actually, we were on Santa Rosa Island, same place that I and Linda and Jim Sparks and Leah Haley and Kay Wilson and a few others all had military abduction right on the end of Santa Rosa Island. And when we were driving through, because there's several places, you know, it's an old World War II base. But when you're driving through, you know, there's big guns here and there's big doors going nowhere. And it's always weird because there's one place you can stop. And you see these big double doors going on the side of this sand dune. And as soon as you get up to it, you can see it goes down. It just goes down. You can't see how far. You can see some light, and you can hear a generator running. I'm always like, huh. I wonder if this is where they take us. I hate even getting around this place now, but it's like I have to go look. It's one of them things. It's weird.
Yeah. Huh? Interesting.
But when I was standing there, I was thinking about you. I'm like, oh, to call Melinda and say, guess where I'm at?
Yeah. Wow.
It's freaky. It is freaky. But all of those people have had experiences, right? And all the same kind of experience. I don't know what that's about. And all of them, public speak now. All of them. Well, almost all of them. I should say almost, because but everybody else speaks. Everybody else has got websites and speaking about it and staying involved in it. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
See, that would make me think that the government doesn't want us shutting up. I think the government wants us talking.
Yeah.
Because really, they've had all of us. They could easily
brainwash this or brainwash that or knock that out.
No, I think you're right. It's not, I think earlier on in the research and earlier on in people's experiences, if they can intimidate you and keep you quiet, then fine. But I think you get, I think they try. But I think once you get beyond that point, it's not about keeping you quiet anymore. It's just whether, I think if you get picked up, it's only because they need you for something, that experience last October, we had a lot of psi stuff, and it was also a mass my lab experience of many abductees in this underground base together, and everyone going through these different procedures, but quite a few of the people, if not the majority of them, were going through this psi testing, and obviously psi being psychic or PSI was specifically a form of PK, psychokinesis, of moving some objects with our mind, and they were looking for people who could do it, and who could do it repeatedly, and people who could do it with ETs helping them, and people who could do it then again on their own without ETs helping them, and they were obviously looking for, and they were like brain mapping, because there was stuff and electrodes in people's heads, and they were obviously trying to map brain waves or something while this was going on, and I think they were really trying to get some statistical results of people who could do this, do it repeatedly, and they were looking for certain kinds of brain patterns, so brain mapping, and that much was obvious, and obviously by doing it to, hundreds of people, they're getting some kind of high statistical result, and maybe there were more people going through this testing than just that night. I mean, they could have been doing this for weeks or months, and if they're taking hundreds of abductees every night, they're getting some real statistical numbers, some research. So, why they're doing that and what they're trying to do with it, I don't know. I can only speculate. I mean, I'm always suspect that they're using it to develop technology and that they're trying to perfect, the brain patterns, and then I even thought maybe they have a way of then feeding those brain waves back to people and enhancing your experience, like maybe you could, if you can produce certain results, can they then entrain your brain so that you can repeatedly produce that, or can they, like pilots of the craft, the human pilots, can they entrain their brain waves to produce those results consistently? I mean, I'm just theorizing, but it all makes sense to me. That's just it. The experience made a lot of sense for what they were doing and what they were trying to achieve. What just kind of threw us was the number of people that they were using. But I guess they really, it wasn't so much like you were being selected out, like they were going to use you for something else. I can't rule that out, but it didn't seem that way. It was mostly they were just looking for, computerized results, and you were patted on the back or patted on the head, if you were producing the results they were looking for, But anyway, so it was really strange. But there were other abductees in this environment obviously doing other things, like people not going through this testing but maybe involved in some other testing or, So, and this is a thing I'm getting more and more in my research now, is these mass my lab events where it's groups of people. I mean, I think I kind of first heard about this from you, and then I started hearing it from some of my cases, and then I reflected back and realized, well, I had it all along in some of the cases, but hadn't seen it for what it was, and now it seems like I'm constantly hearing about this. I mean, these mass experiences of many abductees involved together in a covert ops event, I'm not surprised now when I hear it at all. In fact, I almost kind of expect it. If someone just says, they took just me and there was no one else there, that's more surprising. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of sick, but it's like, are you sure no one else was there? No, no one else was there. It was just me. I'm like, are you sure?
Yeah, but it's true.
But it just seems like it's just getting more and more of that common, and I'm hearing these cases more and more. So that's, if anything, that's kind of the only real development in my own research, is these mass MyLab events and the fact that, I'm constantly meeting more MyLab cases. I don't know so much if it's on the rise and happening to more people, but I'm hearing about it from more abductees, and more people, I think, are opening up to talking about those experiences. I guess also that could also be interpreted. The fact that I'm hearing more about them is that they seem to be on the rise. The covert ops abductions and alien abduction overall. I mean, God, I don't know how you feel about it, but it ain't going away. And when people say, oh, it's decreased, aliens aren't doing that anymore, blah, 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 I'm like, based on whose research? Because my research says quite the opposite. It's just more and more people all the time. And now, too, being here in Sedona, being at the research center, to have people walk into the research center and start telling me about their experiences just out of the blue, just every day somebody told me about an experience.
And that's one of the nice things about being there. You're going to hear a lot of kind of action. Nice. I like, here it's weird. A lot of people's stuff now. We get ungodly amounts of email these days.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, I'm real happy, and we're getting a lot of good stuff. And we've had a good group of contactees coming in the last 2 years, a new group. And then in the last 8 months, we've had a whole new style of contact.
Huh.
Not so much a new style, but it seems to be re-emerging, I guess, might be the way to say. We're going to see where that takes us. But yeah, we're still getting no lab cases by the times. I notice a lot of people come out and then they start getting no lab. And not always that way. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. Because sometimes you might be in the military and get no lab.
Yeah.
Sometimes you may start speaking publicly and the government goes, oh, well, look at this. We didn't know about you. So they're going to get you. And but let me be clear about this. If you don't have anything good, they're not going to mail at you.
Yeah.
Unless it's part of some large experiment, they're not going to.
Yeah. No, exactly. It still seems like it's not just all abductees. You once said it was advanced abductees, and that's not that these abductees are better in any way. They're just people with more alien stuff in their life and more advanced alien stuff in their life, as far as, these are the people that have had the hands-on with the technology and have had the abductions run in their family, and, so they have a family history of it. They've had a lot of technology stuff. They've had a lot of hybridization stuff. It seems like these are the people who just have more of this going on, and thus those are the people who have the covert ops. Now, occasionally, I meet someone who has the covert op stuff and seems to be a fairly casual abductee, or maybe doesn't fit all the scenarios. So, it's none of it's definite, but it tends to be the advanced cases, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think they do that. They bring in control group studies to make sure everything's up and up. So they bring in sometimes, contactees that are different, or people just coming out for the first time. I think they even like to experiment with the awakening, the people coming through the awakening. They might get lucky, and catch somebody who's got a lot of information that just doesn't know it yet.
That too, because, some abductees just aren't aware of what all, if you're an abductee and you're starting to self-investigate and go through regression, you may not be aware how much has actually gone on with you. You're starting to look at 1, 2, 3, maybe even up to 5 experiences, and if you kind of are starting to piece together you've had that many, what do you bet you've had a lot more? And so sometimes I'll get people who, think they're kind of more of a casual abductee, and then they start to relate to my lab stuff. But then as soon as they open up and I get them talking and they start sharing other stuff, it's almost like, I'm sure you have this happen too, you have those people where you get in that in-depth conversation, and all of a sudden the lifetime abduction stuff just starts to pour out of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they even find themselves talking about it, not realizing what they're saying. They just get comfortable and they open up, and next thing you know, they're going on and on, And so, it tends to be like that. But then again, I look at these mass MyLab events, and I think, are all those people really advanced cases? And it makes me wonder, that they must be taking some casual abductees too. So again, none of it's,
See, I used to wonder that. I think that we're a lot more people being taken than we realize. So I don't really, for me, the amount of meal labs being taken just fits into how many people we think is being taken.
Yeah.
We do think there's a lot more being taken than most people realize.
Oh, It's long been known by you and I anyways that you know, for an addictee to finally look at this part of their experience, they're pretty far along at looking at their experiences and self-examining. And they've probably been working with a hypnotherapist for a while and stuff before they even get into this stuff, you know. Usually, you know, the addictee is pretty far along in their story before they realize they've had harassment and surveillance and they're getting black helicopter stuff and, you know, or at least questioning it as something different or something that shouldn't be happening, you know. And so usually a case is pretty far along before they even look at that part.
It really is. I mean, it seems to be that way. You go through the awakening, and you start learning what you're doing, why you're involved, what a lot of the stuff that goes on, you know, what's involved in your own act and what you're doing. You know, because there's so many of us out there that are just ambassadors of the aliens. I hate calling it that because it sounds stupid.
Yeah.
But, you know, they want us out there talking about it. They want us discussing it. And I hate to say this. I don't really think it's for the overall population. I think it's for the people that need to go to the awakening. I think they want people like us talking about it so that these people will get involved. And see, you and Kim have put yourselves in a place for a much more personalized way of doing this.
That's true, you know, we could trick ourselves out by thinking that there's anything other than, you know, other than, okay, you know, I happened to say this at a tour at a conference, and it sounded like a good idea, it sounded like an interesting, you know, business opportunity, and then we came here, and then doing it turned out to be so much fun, and, you know, so part of me is like, well, even the surface-level story works, you know, and it's plausible, you know, but we've thought about, you know, like, for instance, Kim had to wrap her head around the first major sighting she ever had was living in Malibu, and she wrote about it in her first book, and she called it Moon Over Malibu, when this big full moon through fog thing came up in front of her house. Well, then she's here, and the first night she went out to do the night vision with me was the night we had the full moon through fog thing. And the only time she'd ever liked that before, and I never had, I mean, I've had a ton of great sightings in my life, but none like that. And she instantly recalled how it was identical to the first major sighting she had living in Malibu that set off her 8 years of continual abduction stuff. And she was like, and it kind of freaked her out, like, oh my God, is it going to start up all over again? You know, am I going to be going through all this really tough stuff like I did back after I had that sighting in Malibu, which kicked off all her major experiences? And, you know, and she's kind of relieved now that nothing has happened, but it was so similar. And she said, you know, what are the chances of that? You know, she speculated, what are the chances that my first major sighting had this particular look? And then I see the same thing the first night here, not her first night in Sedona. She'd actually been here for about a month, but she was so caught up in this remodel, the house we're in and stuff, that she hadn't gone out with me. So the first night, she goes out with me to take a tour out, to take some people out, you know, officially. She goes out with me when we take this tour out, and we have this incredible sighting that is exactly, you know, and it brought it like full circle for her to have it be the same exact kind of sighting that she had, you know, in Malibu 24 years ago or whatever when it started all her experiences. So it's like, And then to have it here the first night she goes out with the goggles. So it was just, and I said, oh, it's just coincidence, blah, blah, blah. And then the next morning I got up and I came in and I was talking to her and I said, you know what? I got up and I went over to her room and she was up and stuff. And I said, and I was thinking about last night, and I obviously that's way beyond coincidence that the first night you go out here to have a sighting is exactly like the first sighting you had in Melbourne. I mean, that's like, what the, you know, so then we realize, is this a setup? You know, is there something going on here with our being here and doing this? And, you know, and again, it doesn't seem like it came together that way. It seems, but at the same time, we know how this subject works. We know how the ETs manipulate things. And so, you know, it remains a possibility. We choose not to get freaked out about it, or, you know, because it's like, well, you know, we're here doing it. And whether they influenced or is almost beside the point. But it, without a doubt, especially after that sighting, it has crossed our minds.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it has crossed your minds. But even if it was, it doesn't matter. I mean, like I said earlier, I'm jealous. Come on, we're doing sky watches in beautiful Sedona, Arizona for a living.
Yeah. I know, it's tough, isn't it? You know, I mean, and I pinch myself every day because I'm like, oh, my God, I'm doing ufology full time. You know, and I joke with, you know, I've joked with Stan about it, and I've joked with Rich Dolan about, you know, and I've joked once with Whitley about it, you know, the other people, and I'm like, I'm one of you guys, you know. I joke about as far as I'm doing this full time. And Kim and I, we scratch our head and we kind of go, oh, my God, you know, reality check. We're living in Sedona, and we're taking people out skywatching. We sit in a UFO research center all day surrounded by UFO books with people who stroll in there nonstop and tell us their experiences. And it's kind of, at times I have to kind of back off from it. Like, at times it's overwhelming. And we find ourselves wanting to watch TV or go for a hike or even just go to the market or, you know, do some things to get ourselves away from it for a second, because it's a very strange thing to be living in that reality full time. It's very strange.
Oh, I can imagine. It is. It's a good thing. Not a bad thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
A little weird, but good.
Yeah, and it is, and we're having a blast. So, you know, we do find ourselves occasionally, you know, like I, even just now, coming back from dealing with a family emergency thing that took me out of town for about 5 days, it was kind of nice to be all caught up in family and removed from this for like 5 days, because I needed that break, you know.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Anytime you do what you love, it happens.
But, I mean, taking people out, oh, my God. And then I started to miss, like, I wanted to take another group out. I was gone long enough that I really missed it. And I've got some tours booked for this week, so I'm just thrilled, and I'm going to be taking people out. It's great.
That's a good thing. Sounds fun. It sounds entertaining. It also sounds educational. Can't beat that. You really can't. And they might probably be where the person is. It might be where it is. I think a lot of times, even, you know, people say ET puts me there, but sometimes it's karma, whatever, the universe, whatever you want to blame it on.
Yeah,
it's a good thing.
I'm not one of those people. I don't blame ET for everything, and there's very little that I think are things going on in my life or problems or psychological things or stress things or anything. There's very little that I blame on them. But granted, there's a few things. But some abductees start to make it, you know, they give the ETs way too much credit for all that. And, I don't see them as being that active all the time in my life. But then again, I'm suddenly living in Sedona doing UFOs full time, so maybe I need to think about that.
Well, it's not that they might not have nudged you along the way.
It's on me, you know.
Yeah. I mean, they might have wanted you there. I mean, come on, it's you and Kim together, which a couple people have said to me that's a little odd to start off with. And so y'all got together and hooked up, and y'all are making it work and making the business work, so... It's a good thing. And somebody pointed you in that direction, hey, that's even
better.
Well, we
both have places in our life where we needed to kind of start over and needed beginnings, and she needed to move, and I, you know, where she was in the, Kansas City, Missouri, and I was in Newport Beach, and my roommate was moving out of the apartment and giving it up. So, you know, we're both in situations where we suddenly found ourselves needing to move. We were both in situations where we needed to create new lines of work for ourselves. You know, she was just going through a very similar series of life path stuff as I was. So when at a conference I brought this idea up to her, she said, you know, I've been looking for something new to do, you know. And she goes, Ann, I need to move. And when I talked to her, it wasn't like, oh, come do it with me. It was just like I was telling her about it. And then like a month later, she calls me out of the blue and says, are you really going to do that? Were you serious about wanting my help? And I said, were you serious about helping? and it got us just, you know, talking. And then a friend of hers owned this house. A friend of hers owned a house that she wanted to have. You know, she owned a house she was going to turn into a rental property. So, you know, it just all kind of came together just right.
Yeah, that's all right.
It took a big risk. I mean, it took a big leap of faith. You know, I was flying in the airport today. I was in Ontario, California to catch a plane coming home. And I was talking to a guy in line going through security that was kind of a young guy, you know, about my age, burning out on his job. And he had reentered the corporate world a number of years ago, only to say, to be questioning, why did I ever do that, you know. And he talked about he had once been a small business owner and wanted to get back into that. And I was telling him about, you know, how you just got to take that leap of faith. You know, sometimes you just got to go for it. And it's extremely liberating to just go for a dream, and, you know, I mean, to suddenly move to another state and just do it all on a whim. I mean, it was, I mean, part of me says, gee, in most books, I'd be really crazy, you know, in most people's books, that'd be really crazy to just do that, but sometimes you just do, and we both needed fresh new starts, and, you know, and I was telling this guy about how, as I said, how liberating it was to just suddenly, you know, do something completely different and go after a dream. And it's very empowering. I mean, now I live in Sedona and do UFOs full time, and it's so empowering. It's so freeing. And now I just got to make it work. So everybody come on out for a tour. Help me make the business work.
I'll get down and visit. It's worth going down and visit. And if you're going to go down, you might as well go see Ken and come on, guys. You're going to get a UFO tour with famous ufologists. Come on, you can't even ask.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Kim and I, you know, we talked about, I mean, we've both been researchers for years. We've had so many experiences, you know, and people are just blown away by it. They're like, people always say, oh, my God, you guys are so knowledgeable. And we kind of look at each other. But we go, yeah, well, we earned that, you know. We earned that.
That's true.
And we earned the respect we get in ufology. We absolutely earned it. You know, it was a lot of hard work for a lot of years. I mean, Kim and I joke about, you know, if they gave out degrees in this, we'd have double and triple masters in ufology, you know. Gosh.
Well, somebody asked me one way the other day.
And I know a lot of researchers who would agree, you know. I don't think there's any researcher going, well, you guys don't know that much. You know, most of the researchers
that
say, you guys have earned it, and yes, you would. You know.
Oh, I love the rookies. I love the rookies. They always think they know everything. I'm like, excuse me, how long have you been in the field? A day? You shut up.
Yeah.
Go learn something, come back, talk to me. See, I don't have to be polite. I don't. Leave me alone. I don't want to hear it. Go book somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll throw them stuff. Go call Stanton Friesen.
Yeah.
Talk to you. Go talk to him.
Yeah. That's right. But, you know, the serious people in the field who stick with it, you know, earn, you know, because it's a hard field to have recognition in. Your research, you know, whether you're standing up to talk about your experiences or you're standing up to do, you know, be a lone Roswell researcher or a lone whatever, you know, historian like Richard or, you know, everybody's got, like, everybody's alone, you know. It's like, yeah, we're a group and we support each other, but your research and what you do, you're off on your own doing it, you know. And so everybody earns any accomplishment, you know. And this field is tough. It demands, you know, high standards from each other.
And it demands a lot.
Yeah.
If you're quiet in this field, you'll be forgotten in no time at all, too. Well, maybe except for Stan. Nobody's going to ever forget Stan.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they're quick to correct you, as you well know.
Oh, yeah.
if you screw up or you stray, you know, this field will correct you really quick. I mean, we police our own pretty severely. And everybody gets in line and cleans up their act, or they're tossed out, basically, you know. And God knows we've known people who've left the field or been torn out, you know, and yeah, because it's, yeah.
Well, they would love to get rid of me, but...
That's what I was joking.
I'm actually doing good research, so be
tolerant. You clean up your acts. Every time you or I, you know, come under issue, we clean up our acts.
Oh, yeah, we do. Well, you know, we're just, we like to get into this stuff in ufology that most ufology don't want to mess with. So it gets us in trouble from time to time.
Yeah. But then we get respect for, you know, from the people in ufology, because they're like, well, thank God you guys are doing that, not us, you know.
Well,
so
nice
you end up, you know, first they're like, what are you doing? And then they're like, oh, well, okay, well, since you're doing a good job at it, it's okay. And, you know, so we end up...
Well, it's great when you get a famous ufologist call you and say, oh, I heard you on Coast of America, I heard you talking to somebody. Man, you know, what was that about? It's nice.
Yeah.
You know you're doing your job. Oh, really matters. But, oh, God, it's 9 o'clock. Well, it's 7 o'clock your time, but 9 o'clock my time. Give them the websites again.
Are we getting out of time?
Yeah,
okay.
We're out of time.
Well, you were going to have me talk more about my personal experiences. I don't think
you
got
know
it, but we can all
Yeah, I'll get Melinda back on, guys, because I was really interested in what they're doing down there, and there was some other stuff we were just chit-chatting about, so you got to watch us. We'll get to chit-chat.
Yeah.
But, no, it was good. That's a good show, anyway. There's a lot of good information, anyways. There's a lot of stuff in there. Plus, you need to get down to Sedona and check it out and hang out and visit. See, I like the idea.
I mean, again, no joke, we have sightings. I tell people, come out, you know, if you want to have a sighting, come go out with us, because... We have sightings, for real. No joke.
I like that. There's two of y'all down there doing this.
I mean, you know, not only are they seeing UFOs, but we just always have a blast, too. You know. And,
You asked
me to give out the website. It's, www.SedonaUFOSkyTours.com.
And don't you have a little site where you keep your stuff at, too? What is it? Oh, I just seen it a little while ago.
My other site?
Yeah, what is it?
Alienexperiences.com.
You can go there,
and my name appears over on the left side, and you can click on it and go to me. Or you can go directly to alienexperiences.com/Melinda Leslie.
And Nadine Leach is on that site, too, right?
Nadine Lawlich's site.
And
she's very generously providing space to me on her site.
Yeah, she's a nice person.
Yeah, Nadine's fantastic. She does incredible research. She co-wrote Barbara Lamb's book with her. And Nadine is an abductee, and as well as one of my lab covert ops cases. She's an incredible lady. And she's really reworked and redeveloped her website. It's just beautiful. So I encourage everyone. And there's a great list of traits of abductees on her site. I'm always referring people to it. On alienexperiences.com, you go to where it says questionnaire. I think it's one of the things on the, you know, menu listed on the left. It says questionnaire. And when you go to that and you scroll through it, it's 65 traits for an abductee. And she really... took, like, all the research out there by all the top abduction researchers and took everybody's list and narrowed it down and rewrote it and tried to really compile, like, the definitive list of traits. And I'm so pleased to have been able to add my research to it. And it's her research and Barbara Lamb's research. But it's got everybody's stuff. And it's really, like, the 65 traits. I mean, you probably got something like that on your site, too. For all I know, you might even have a link to her. I don't know. But her list is really superb. And you can just look at the list of questions and print it out and see if it applies to you. But another thing is, at the top, she has like a little thing you can fill out if you want to send your results to her, like, you know, anonymously, of course. You can do it anonymously or provide your name, and, you know, that's up to you. But you can tell her what your results were, like how many things you answered yes to, and, you know, that, or which ones you answered yes to. And, but you don't need to. So you can skip that part of the form, and you can just scroll down, look at the questions. You don't need to respond to her, but she would love, because she's trying to do some real statistical numbers for, you know, what people answer yes to. So if you want to contribute to the research, that's great, but it's not necessary to do so.
Yeah. It always helps, sir.
Yeah,
I think you do have actually a list like that. I'm glad you brought that up. For any of the iCard directors listening tonight, August 14th, 3 p.m., we've got a director's meeting. Also, that is to discuss the remodel of the new website and to introduce some of the new directors to the old directors. Just thought I'd let y'all know that. Oh, no, yeah, because they want to change all kind of stuff on the site. So not arguing with them. I'm just letting them do it. I just want to make sure I'm not getting crazy.
You know, having had just worked with Kim, and our web's basically designed by Kim, and she just admittedly, you know, we had another webmaster who was going to do it, long story short, and for Sedona UFO Sky Tours, and we ended up not going that route, and before we knew it, you know, we're clicking along, and boom, we didn't have a site, and it's like, oh my gosh, we need to get something together. So she used GoDaddy, and it worked great, so we just did a site on GoDaddy, but it has everything it needs, and it, you know, so sometimes, you know, it's one of those less is more kind of things. And we're going to tweak it. We have some stuff we want to add. We're going to put some more videos on there. We're going to have a whole section of photos. You know, we're starting to take more photos when we go out and around, so we're going to have our own. Ooh, big thunder clap outside. Wow. We're about to have some real rain, so we're getting some thunder and lightning. You know, we're going to add to it. So when you go in and you look at the videos and the photos now, you know, maybe, well, Kim's not going to be back for a couple of weeks, but maybe in, say, a month from now, look at it again. Because she already said as soon as she gets back from her trip, she's going to do, like, the next wave of stuff on there. I mean, she was trying to get it before she left. But now, as soon as she gets back, we're going to add a bunch more stuff. So there'll be more videos, more photos, more information. It'll constantly be under development to have more going on, but it's, again, it's one of those less is more kind of things.
That's a good thing.
It's got what it needs on it, and now we're just going to add, you know, like I said, more photos, more videos, more information about the tour, but all the basics are there, and right now it'll provide people with the information about what we do and how to join us.
And it's a nice site. I was on it. Actually, I still got it open. It's a nice little site. You know, you got to be careful because the iCard site's now 158 or 178 pages.
Wow.
Ridiculous.
Wow.
The stuff that I didn't even know was there.
Yeah.
The stuff that I thought we took down years ago that's there. Oh, I got some stuff on there. And they're going to add like another 40 pages. So we'll see what happens with that. Anyway, it's one-stop shopping for Duffy's. That's the whole idea.
Well, we have it really kind of be specific to providing the information about the tours and how to go on the tours and what the tours are about and what we see. And, you know, so we really wanted it to be a real, you know, point of information about that. And so we've specifically, oh, goodness, the lightning and the thunder is now freaking out the animals. It's really intense. and that time, the thunder immediately followed the lightning, so it's happening right here.
Well, let's get you off the phone and go. I want to get electrocuted while you're talking.
Yeah. Well, at least it's a cordless, so I'm not going to do a Danion Brinkley on everybody, no.
Kim will swear I set it up.
You know, at least it's not connected to a line, so I'm less likely to get electrocuted. It would have to, you know,
jump across.
Go through the air. So.
That's good.
Yeah, I won't pull a Danion on everybody. Oh, goodness, poor Danion.
but one more time. Give them the website address, and then we're going to get.
Oh, the website is SedonaUFOSkyTours.com, and then Kim's the links to Kim's sites about her book and her artwork and her photography work, and the links to my other site are all on there under, I forget if it's called links or contact or, you know, but it's all on our site. So if people just go to SedonaUFOSkyTours.com, from there they can find our other information. And a link to the Center for the New Ages site, too. And they just added a bunch of information about me to their site. Actually, it was supposed to all be completed while I was gone, so I need to look to see if they've got that. But the Center for the New Ages site is also being built out, and all of our tour information will be on there. So if people look right now and it's not there, just again within a couple weeks, that'll be done as well if it's not already done. But certainly on our site, everything they'd want to know is on our site.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get out of here. Melinda's stuff will be up on the UFO Undercover site for another week. So y'all go by and click any time. It'll take you right over there. Sooner or later, I will get a banner.
Can you hear that? Can you hear the thunder
on
the phone?
That. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I heard that come through. It made a phone go, shh. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get out of here before Melinda gets us all wet. Until next Wednesday, everybody. Have some fun. Enjoy your wives. Smile. See y'all next Wednesday.
UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Are you a fan of the unknown?
Do you constantly watch the sky, wondering if there's something out there?
This presentation brings you headfirst into the world of the paranormal with the latest news and interviews with the paranormal elite.
With hosts Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, you are sure to be consumed in the world of ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, conspiracy theories, and the unknown.
So check out Whispers Radio every Tuesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Central. And give us a call, 1-866-514-1600.
Visit us at www.whispersradio.com.
Hi, I'm Gia Scott. I'm the host of this really cool little radio program on Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. It's called The Dawn of Shades. I bring in a wide variety of guests, and we talk about all sorts of things. Some are authors, some are experiencers, but it's all paranormal. Do tune in to The Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays, and you can always catch our guest list at www.gscott.com.
The Church of Mabus radio show is now in session, Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern, with high strange scholars teaching us of ufology, the paranormal, the occult, and the metaphysical. Seek sanctuary with the Dark Reverends, Jeffrey Pritchett and Guy Widell, at www.mabusincarnate.com, always moshing with the apocalypse. Now get down on your knees and pray!
Hi, you've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know, I'm Irish.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Are you interested in a radio program that focuses on the deeper aspects of the UFO topic? Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about? Then please join us here every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, with your host, D. Andrew, right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And remember, UFO research is not a new system.
Second Sight NYC must be doing something right.
Why do you say that, Chris?
Well, we've told people to kiss our beep if they want something sugar-coated to buy a donut, and we have more listeners than ever.
Maybe that's something to do with everything Second Sight NYC has to offer.
What do you mean, like our rapid-fire readings or our real cool New York accent?
What about the gemstone of the week, psychic dream interpretation, email readings, and birthday week readings?
Plus, we always have a great guest interview.
You still lose your mind every now and then, Chris.
Yeah, whatever. And you're still there to reel me back in, Benetti. Let's cross the threshold of what's real and unreal together.
Join us each week at 8 p.m.